corporate candy floss news and no political spin. This is Truth Radio by Internet. Thanks to our sponsor, neemwell.com, because here, the expression is still free.
Did the CIA plant a deep mole at the heart of the cold fusion issue? And did they use him to demolish that technology? And are they using the same person again today in the 9/11 issue? You're on the next level.
Would you do me a favor and push me on to the next level?
And you're very welcome. This is Fintan Dunn reporting. Thanks for joining us. And thanks also to our sponsor, neemwell.com, your personal source for potent Indian neem. And yes, it's anti-inflammatory as well as everything else, so you can use it for your sunburn. It's also antiviral, antifungal, antiparasitic, antihistamine. Just check it out at neemwell, neemwell.com, or email Kathy, Kathy, at neemwell.com. Okay, let's get right to it. One of the most important shows I've done. Now, you're probably familiar, if you're familiar with the 9/11 issue, you're familiar with Professor Stephen E. Jones of Brigham University. And he is a member of the Scholars for 9/11 Truth. That was convened by Jim Fetzer, who is well known to David Ray Griffin, a little clique operating there, and we've identified these individuals as part of the deception operation, the false 9/11 front. And in this edition, we'll be taking a good close look at Stephen E. Jones, and I'll be making the case that he is in fact a CIA mole. Now, when I say CIA, you've got to interpret that liberally. It's shorthand. It's shorthand for either a CIA agent, NSA agent, or an agent of private intelligence controlled by upper echelons of the CIA, NSA, FBI, DIA. So it's a bit of a shorthand, but there you go. I'm saying that Stephen E. Jones is a CIA mole, and we'll be examining his role in what happened in Cold Fusion back in 1989. And I think this is a mistake by the agency to use Stephen Jones after having used him back in 1989. I think it would have been better to pick somebody else. Yeah, it's great to have a professor on board your fake movement because it lends gravitas, doesn't it? And he's got credentials, particularly with the left wing and with liberal opinion. But not Stephen E. Jones. He's dirty, and I'll be explaining just why. Back in 1989, there was an extraordinary period of 5 or 6 weeks when Cold Fusion hit the headlines, stayed in the headlines, and was a global story. It was on the 24th of March 1989 that two scientists, Pons and Fleischmann, announced that they had discovered a new source of energy, one which could liberate us from oil and dependency on oil. That was a popular topic right then because we were just after the Exxon Valdez oil spill, which had given oil a bad name. And memories of the oil crisis of the 70s were still fresh. So anybody coming along saying they had discovered a new type of energy was going to hit the headlines, particularly as that news was fast-tracked into the headlines by none other than the Washington Post. But before long, news had spread around the world, even in those pre-internet days. What Pons and Fleischmann were saying was that they could use palladium electrodes sitting in deuterium, which is heavy water, which is found in ordinary water and thus widely available, as is the palladium. And using that apparatus alone, they had discovered a way of liberating the nuclear energy in the deuterium in order to provide a viable alternative to nuclear power, and a much safer one at that. It was astounding news when it came out, despite the fact that Pons and Fleischmann admitted that they weren't getting this effect consistently. It was happening sporadically, and it was hard to predict what it was that was making it happen, but something in the deuterium and palladium was providing the perfect combination to liberate this energy. And that was the good news. But the good news didn't last long, folks, because within a few weeks, the words cold fusion and scam or hoax had become synonymous in many people's minds, because some key scientific groups and scientists around the world said they could not duplicate the results that Pons and Fleischmann had obtained. And there was a famous meeting in Baltimore at which a number of Caltech scientists and Stephen E. Jones spoke. And as a result of that, which was reported in the New York Times as having completely debunked the cold fusion breakthrough as a result of that meeting and other events in the 4 or 5 weeks following the announcement, cold fusion dropped out of the headlines and was regarded, and has been regarded since, as speculative, alternative, unfounded, and a waste of time. And so it might be a little surprising to you to hear that we've just had the 12th International Congress or International Meeting on cold fusion, on this going nowhere technology. Now that is surprising. Yeah, they're still at it. Not only are they still at it, but they're perfecting it. And they have got some good leads as to why cold fusion could actually work and is an alternative to nuclear energy and hot fusion. Now, hot fusion is what they have poured literally hundreds of millions of dollars into in the intervening period, having discounted cold fusion. And the idea of hot fusion is that you achieve these nuclear energy liberations by using extremely high temperatures and confining those high temperatures inside a magnetic vase, because the temperatures would burn through any kind of container. And they're getting nowhere with that. Nowhere with hot fusion. Not in our lifetime. And if you listened to our last show, you would have heard me talk about the spending on hot fusion as a deliberate dead end. What I believe they're doing with hot fusion is they are using it as the coming thing, which never actually manages to come, which we never get there. It's a diversion. It's a dead end, hot fusion. And what I'm going on to say in this broadcast is that cold fusion was not a dead end and is not a dead end. And yes, we've had the 12th International Meeting on Cold Fusion, but that is against a backdrop where the vast majority of scientists have ignored the issue, where you can't get stuff published in peer-reviewed, except perhaps in about 4 or 5 journals around the world. You can't get stuff published about cold fusion. Furthermore, so many people have steered clear of cold fusion because to even have it known that you worked in this area is career suicide in some areas, if not most areas. So the achievement of being at now the 12th Annual Congress on cold fusion is quite an achievement. And the funding which has been put into this is minuscule. And that's been a big problem in holding back the developments, because it does take money to develop this kind of technology. It takes money to develop any emerging technology, particularly when it's not working reliably. Remember that transistors didn't work reliably in the early days. Superconductivity had to be tweaked and finessed until it worked right. And there are surprises all the time. Superconductivity was a surprise. So was superconductivity at high temperatures, regarded as impossible. But of course, after they did it, they worked out the quantum physics and realized, yeah, it was actually possible. So I'm saying that cold fusion is a potential energy. I'm saying that the establishment knew that cold fusion was a potential energy, and they were waiting in the long grass for Pons and Fleischmann. What happened there was an operation, an intelligence operation, back in 1989, one whereby the news of cold fusion was blown up by the media, only because those behind the scenes knew that they were then going to destroy it in the weeks ahead. And they were, in fact, ambushing the research on cold fusion in order to set it back. And they did. And they have. They set it back 17 years. And I'm saying that one individual played a key role in that. That individual was Stephen E. Jones. We'll get into the story of that. And I'm saying that he's doing it again, this time on the 9/11 issue. Like I say, mistake by the agency, I think. They should have picked somebody clean. Because when you take a look at what Stephen E. Jones did in relation to cold fusion, if you believe that cold fusion was an intelligence operation, then his role is quite clear. CIA mole. By the way, if you want any links, background information on this, you can click on the photo beside the photo of Stephen E. Jones right beside this audio link, and that'll take you to a page in the forum where you'll get background info. Now, cold fusion didn't sneak up on us. Cold fusion was first talked about back as far as 1929. So we're talking about something that was known about and that conceivably could well have been researched in secret by the US government and could have been known about as a potential energy source prior to Pons and Fleischmann getting involved in the area. It was in 1984 that Fleischmann and Pons first began experimenting with cold fusion energy. And that was, of course, the time that the current cartel were already in power, the Reagan era, with Daddy Bush running the CIA. And then in 1986, Brigham Young University and Stephen E. Jones began to get involved in this type of cold fusion research. Not exactly the same kind as Pons and Fleischmann, though. And we'll come back to that. That turns out to be very important. And in 1987, Jones published an article called Nuclear Fusion in Scientific American, and, if you like, established his credentials in the area. Then in 88, Fleischmann and Pons applied to the US Department of Energy for funding, official funding, because they'd supported their work out of their own pockets up to that point. And the application, the grant application, which they put in to the US Department of Energy, was actually reviewed by Stephen E. Jones. What I'm saying is that Stephen Jones was recruited in those years or earlier, had already been recruited, and he was placed in that area in order that he could, if you like, guard their flank on the issue of cold fusion. Stephen E. Jones, having established himself as an authority in the area, actually reviewed the grant application of Fleischmann and Pons. Little did they know who they were dealing with. And, of course, they had contacts over the course of 1988. And then by March of 1989, Pons and Fleischmann were ready to publish their material, as was Stephen Jones ready to publish his material on cold fusion. Now, as I said, the work that Stephen Jones was engaged in was cold fusion, but it was a completely different type of cold fusion. Now, if you don't know that, then you are not on the inside track for some of the stuff that happened at the time that the story about cold fusion broke. Stephen Jones was working on a different type of cold fusion. Yes, it involved deuterium. Yes, it involved cold fusion, but it was what's called muon catalyzed cold fusion. Muons are heavy electrons, and this is in effect an artifact. You could use muon catalyzed fusion, and it did liberate some nuclear energy, but you ran out of muons to fuel the reaction. That was known, and this had been predicted on theoretical grounds back as far as 1950, and it was well known. It was known, and it was known it was a real dead end. Muon-catalyzed fusion is a dead end. It produces a little bit of energy, a tiny amount of energy more than one-to-one, which is unity. It produces over-unity, but at infinitesimal levels, which are no goddamn good to anybody. But it was a very safe area of research in cold fusion for Stephen Jones, because it didn't rock the boat. It was a technology that was going nowhere, and it allowed him to insert himself in the cold fusion area or be inserted by persons unknown behind the scenes, and pronounce on it. And also talk about the results that he had out of cold fusion and use that to undermine Pons and Fleischmann. And that's the key to this, and the key to Jones's role in the cold fusion story, is the fact that he was working in a safe, dead-end area of research, which nevertheless gave him authority on the subject. Now we'll get into exactly what happened and what he said and what he did just after we take some music. This guy played support to Radiohead at their first US gig, and thanks to Hawkwind in the forum for the tip. This is Willie Mason and Oxygen. You're on The Next Level on breakfornews.com, and we'll be right back.
I wanna be better than oxygen, so you can breathe when you're drowning and weak in the knees. I wanna speak louder than Ritalin for all the children who think that they've got a disease. I wanna be cooler than TV for all the kids that are wondering what they're going to be. We can be stronger than bombs if you're singing along and you know that you really believe. We can be richer than industry as long as we know that there's things that we don't really need. We can speak louder than ignorance, 'cause we speak in silence every time our eyes meet. On and on and on it goes, the world it just keeps spinning, until I'm dizzy, time to breathe, so close my eyes and start again. I wanna see through all the lies of society to the reality happiness is at stake. I wanna hold up my head with dignity, proud of a life where to give means more than to take. I wanna live beyond the modern mentality where paper is all that you're really taught to create. Do you remember the forgotten America? Justice, equality, freedom to every race. Just need to get past all the lies and hypocrisy, makeup and hair to the truth behind every face. Then look around to all the people you see. How many of them are happy and free? I know it sounds like a dream, but it's the only thing that can get me to sleep at night. I know it's hard to believe, but it's easy to see that something here isn't right. I know the future looks dark, but it's there that the kids of today must carry the light. On and on and on it goes, the world it just keeps spinning, till I'm dizzy, time to breathe, so close my eyes and start again anew.
And you're very welcome back. You're on The Next Level on breakfornews.com. Now, we'll take up the story with the announcement by Pons and Fleischmann on the 24th of March 1989 that they had achieved cold fusion. Sporadically, but achieved cold fusion. Many of the scientists who came out and rubbished the claim were, of course, members of the hot fusion community who were getting literally hundreds of millions of dollars and have continued to get that money for hot fusion research. So they weren't going to be that thrilled by the idea that they could be upstaged by equipment which would render the high cost of nuclear energy completely obsolete. In other words, you're talking tabletop expenditure. You're talking being able to refine this device, even taking a conservative view, so that you could put in a neighborhood cold fusion energy generator for serving a local community. That kind of level. And it would cost a few hundred thousand dollars, $100,000 or less. Who knows when it's refined. So it was bad news for vested interests, because it also meant that centralized power, which relied on the ability to turn on and off the tap on oil, was going to be dealt a severe blow. It would give a huge degree of independence to people and to communities around the world if it was true. Was it? Well, the controversy boiled for weeks as some scientists said that yes, they could reproduce these effects and others said they couldn't. And then we came to a key meeting just weeks later on the 1st of May, which took place. It was the American Physical Society meeting in Baltimore. And Stephen Jones was present at that meeting. Not only was he present at the meeting, Stephen Jones spoke first at that key scientific meeting. And he pointed out, as was reported by the New York Times subsequently, that the kind of output he was getting from his cold fusion was nothing like that which has been achieved or claimed to be achieved by Pons and Fleischmann. Now, you and I know that of course he couldn't get the kind of energies they're talking about. He's using a different kind of cold fusion, which only produces a small amount of energy. You know that. I know that. Did the great unwashed masses know that? No. Did the journalists know that? No. Did the scientists know that? Yeah, some of them. Some would have been aware, but given the specialization in science, not everybody was up to speed on the minutiae of cold fusion. Nevertheless, having pointed out that he wasn't getting the energy outputs that Pons and Fleischmann were getting, he concluded his talk by saying, as reported by the New York Times days later, "Is this a shortcut to fusion energy? Read my lips, no." Read my lips being a particularly appropriate phrase at the time. And he described his own work as a fragile flower that would never grow into a tree, producing useful energy, but could nevertheless beautify science. So, Stephen E. Jones poured cold water on cold fusion as a recognized authority in the area. And, if you like, he was a bridge man. He was working in respectable cold fusion. He wasn't claiming any great results. He wasn't rocking the boat. He was working in cold fusion. He was using a different type of cold fusion. He was getting what were predictable results out of that based on theoretical work. No big deal. In other words, the ideal flanker to demolish the claims of cold fusion. And he spoke first at that meeting. He wasn't the only one to speak. There were others. But the key group was a hit team from Caltech. As Dr. David Goodstein from the California Institute of Technology later wrote, it was those three, Steve Coonan, Nathan Lewis, and Charles Barnes, who, as he puts it, executed between them a perfect slam dunk that cast cold fusion right out of the arena of mainstream science, where it has languished ever since. That was that Baltimore meeting. And it was reported 2 days later, on the 3rd of May 1989, in the New York Times, under the headline "Physicists Debunk Claim of a New Kind of Fusion" by Malcolm W. Brown, Baltimore, hopes that a new kind of nuclear fusion might give the world an unlimited source of energy appear to have been dealt a devastating blow by scientific evidence presented here. In 2 days of meetings, lasting until midnight, members of the American Physical Society heard fresh experimental evidence from many researchers that nuclear fusion in a jar of water does not exist. Physicists seemed generally persuaded, as the sessions ended, that assertions of cold fusion were based on nothing more than experimental errors by scientists in Utah. And by the way, those statements of errors were, they went much further than that. And Pons and Fleischmann were accused of being fraud. That's what they were accused of being. Anyhow, back to that May 3rd, 1989 report in the New York Times. In a telephone interview, Dr. James Brophy, the director of research at the University of Utah, where Pons and Fleischmann were working, responded, "It's difficult to believe that after 5 years of experiments, Dr. Pons and Fleischmann could have made some of the errors I've heard have been alleged at the American Physical Society meeting." But that defense didn't get them very far. Back to the New York Times. Some of the experiments also sought to reproduce the less contentious findings on cold fusion reported independently by Dr. Stephen E. Jones and his colleagues at the Brigham Young University in Utah, Dr. Jones, who used a device similar to the one in the Pons-Fleischmann experiment, did not claim that any useful energy was produced. See, there you go. And so the New York Times gets away with portraying Stephen Jones as a sensible scientist, while at the same time they mention that he's using a device similar to the one. Similar. Give me a break. Fantastic piece of sleight of hand. Great intelligence operation design to position Stephen Jones in that manner. And you got that sentence in the New York Times. Continuing in the New York Times. But he did report that slightly more neutrons were detected while the cell was operating than could be expected from normal sources. The results suggest at least the possibility of fusion, he said, although it's not likely to be useful as an energy source. Continues the Times, physicists who have investigated Dr. Jones' report have been fairly restrained in their criticism, acknowledging that Dr. Jones is a careful scientist. But from the outset, they have expressed profound skepticism of claims by Dr. Fleischmann and Dr. Pons. Since March, scores of laboratories in the United States and abroad have sought to repeat the cold fusion experiments, and some completed their investigations just hours before the meeting was convened here Monday. The most thoroughgoing of the attempts to validate the Pons-Fleischmann experiment was conducted at the California Institute of Technology, Caltech. According to Dr. Nathan Lewis, leader of the Caltech team, every possible variant of the Pons-Fleischmann experiment was tried without success. Using equipment far more sensitive than any available to the Utah group, because they didn't have the money, Caltech failed to find any symptoms of fusion. The scientists found no emitted neutrons, gamma rays, tritium, or helium, although the Utah group reported all these emissions at high levels. And the cells consumed energy rather than produced it, the Caltech team said. Well, I don't know how they didn't find any of that stuff. It's certainly possible that they legitimately didn't, because some were finding, some weren't. It depends, in part, on the kind of palladium you're using. But I suspect, I'm not making statements in relation to the Caltech group, I suspect that that was a hit organized by Caltech. But that's just a suspicion. In the case of Stephen E. Jones, I have no doubt as to Stephen Jones's role in all this. But let's just say, between Stephen Jones and Caltech, they demolished cold fusion. And you can get the rest of that New York Times article in the links which go with this show. Just click on the photo of Stephen Jones, that will take you to the forum. And towards the end of that New York Times report, they quote the comments by Stephen Jones. Is this a shortcut to fusion energy? Read my lips. No. Well, cold fusion was down, but it wasn't out. Thank God it wasn't out. Thank God for the determined scientists, the curious scientists, who have, in many cases, to the cost of their own careers and out of their own pocket, continued to fund research into cold fusion. That Stephen Jones set us back 17 years. 17 years by what he did. But cold fusion research has continued. And of course, it's worth asking the question at this point, does it actually work? Could it actually work? Well, it looks as if it could, because the latest research in that area, and you can read about that in the links also, the latest research indicates that it's the amount of deuterium or heavy water that you get into the palladium that is one of the key elements in whether you get excess heat output, nuclear output, out of this relatively simple device. It's an X factor, and that X factor of 0.6 or 0.7, then you may sporadically get heat output. But if you can get the X factor up to around about 0.85, then you will get heat out most of the time. And they're still working on types of palladium, and they're working on issues about the actual device, the structure of the device, and the method of operation to refine it. But they are reliably getting, consistently getting now, they're getting more energy out. They're getting nuclear energy out of the cold fusion devices. And they still can't get published in the mainstream media. And they can't get published in the scientific press, apart from a handful of periodicals which publish this material. But they're getting the results. cold fusion has come in from the cold just a little in recent years, but it has been desperately set back by the events of March, April and May 1989. And I'll tell you what I think, scientifically, making a scientific judgment on this, is that I would encourage those who are researching in cold fusion to continue, because I suspect that cold fusion is going to be a technology which will produce phenomenal results. And the reason I think that, the scientific reason I think that, is that they wouldn't be going to this much goddamn trouble in order to put cold fusion out into the cold if it wasn't worth it. Think about that. If you're a scientist researching in this area, get some hope from that. Understand this analysis if you are scientifically working in this area and realize what's going on. It means that you're onto it, dude, so keep at it. Now, taking those issues right up to today, here we have Stephen E. Jones once again playing a role in a major controversial issue, and this time it's 9/11. I wonder if he'll set us back another 17 years on the 9/11 issue. Maybe that's the plan. Maybe it would have worked. Maybe it won't work anymore, because maybe it was a dumb move to use Stephen E. Jones, because maybe the not dumb people who investigate the 9/11 issue, maybe they're not so dumb that they can't take a look back at the cold fusion issue. Just go read the links that go with this audio. Read about it. Look at what I've said about Stephen Jones's role. If you conclude, as I have, that cold fusion was an intelligence operation, the whole scandal was an intelligence operation, that Stephen Jones was an intelligence operative placed in that area in order to take out cold fusion, then you can conclude that he's doing the same job again. And if you don't even believe that 9/11 was an inside job, if you haven't even looked into that ever, it's never occurred to you to look into it, if you're only listening to this audio because you heard it was about cold fusion, then have a look at 9/11. Why don't you? And maybe you'll find a cover up there, because we, who have been investigating 9/11 now for the best part of 4 or 5 years, we know it was an inside job, and we know that Jonesy boy, he's doing the same job again. And one other thing that I'd like to say to those of you who do care about the 9/11 issue, not only for the people killed, but for what it enabled. I've already addressed in a previous audio in relation to the 9/11 rat's nest. You can find that in the Break for News forum also. I've said that it was a mistake by the agency to leave Wayne Madsen, by the WHO, whoever, NSA, DIA, CIA. It was a mistake to leave Wayne Madsen in place and active after the way he crashed and burned in the Democratic Underground Forum when I outed him there. They should have just left Wayne Madsen out of it. It was a mistake to keep using him. And I think it was another mistake to use Stephen E. Jones. So these people do make mistakes. And sometimes they're big mistakes. Bad news for them. Good news for us. That's it. Short and sweet. It's a wrap for this edition. And I will be back soon with more. I hope you can join me for that. But in the meantime, for breakfornews.com, this has been Fintan Dunn reporting.
Will you always keep me warm? Hold me safe and away from harm. Keep day for night, and as the day fades, burn a candle bright for me. Will you always keep me warm? Hold me safe and away from harm. Keep day for night, and as the day fades, burn a candle bright for me. Walking into the sun. Walking into the sun.